Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Punk, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
What's good, what's good, what's good? This your boy Marcus Harvey from Ghost Brothers.
What's happening, man? It's your boy Daylon Spratt from Ghost Brothers.
And this is Jawan Mass from the Ghost Brothers. We like to give a big shout out to the Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hillbilly Horror Stories, where your stories is from a hillbilly and it's kind of horror-y, because it's Hillbilly Horror Stories.
That was terrible, Daylon.
Yeah. I tried.
Tune into the podcast. We up in here.
Ghost Brothers.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 362 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy's a little under the weather, so her voice is a little cracky.
Yeah, sorry guys.
So, to say the least, it's a little bit off. But we're going to get through this, and we're going to try to get her well, because obviously we have a big show in 6 days in Buffalo, New York.
I know. I'm very excited about this, so I got to kick my butt in gear and get better.
Tracy, we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil service members all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all you men, women, and service animals for everything you do every single day.
Absolutely. Bless your all's hearts. We pray for you guys every single day, you know, and sometimes I wish we could do more, but I think prayer works. So we will keep you in our thoughts. Thank you for keeping us safe. We love y'all.
Tracy, I've had a few people write me this past week that are typically people that are really happy-go-lucky most of the time,
mm-hmm.
and they've just encountered some stuff in life that's got them down. And it just goes to show it doesn't matter who you are, how happy you are, what's going on in life. All it takes is one situation to just turn your life upside down.
And that's so true. It's hard to keep a happy smile on your face all the time if you're struggling. And, you know, they do the best that they can, but we always want you to reach out to us in the group. And, you know, we're always there for you guys. If you need to call Jerry or I, we'll give you our phone numbers, and we'd be glad to talk with you guys just to, you know, lend an ear to see if y'all, you know, need help or whatever. So just please reach out to the group. I promise you, you will get an answer or somebody to talk to within minutes. And it doesn't matter what time of day or night. So again, we're so blessed to have this group. If you want to call the crisis hotline, that is 988, and you can also text us 741-741. Just remember, you guys are not alone, not ever.
Absolutely. Tracy, we got a fun show tonight.
Okay.
We've got Todd Bates on.
Oh, great.
And his book is amazing, but his story is even more amazing.
Oh, wonderful.
And we're
going to
talk about that tonight. And this man has been through it all.
Really?
If you want an inspirational story, this is it. So I can't wait for you guys to hear his story. The book, by the way, is The Haunted Voice. Great book. He's also got a podcast by the same name.
Nice.
That they run live, like on YouTube and stuff, and then they put the podcast out.
Oh, that's awesome.
At a later time, so if somebody missed it or something, they still get to hear it.
Good.
But yeah, fantastic guy, fantastic story. This is a guy who is a corrections officer. He ends up going to jail, and going to jail actually saved his life. I'm not going to say saved his life, but it turned his whole life around.
Good.
But if you hear the story about how he went to jail and all this stuff, it's just going to completely blow your mind.
Well, sometimes it takes something like that to get you back on track, and I'm glad it helped him.
Absolutely. So, can't wait for you guys to hear that. You're going to love it. I'm going to have him back on again.
Great.
In the future. All right. So, Tracy, I thought for tonight we would just talk about some random ghostly experiences that some people have had. Just fun, straight up paranormal. Let's jump into it.
All right. I'm ready.
This first story takes place at Canmore Recreation Center. That's in Alberta, Canada.
Okay.
It's basically like where you can go for youth hockey leagues and stuff like that to play hockey in. Kevin Stevenson, he was working late one night. And this was back in 1983. Now, Kevin was a hockey rink attendant. So his job basically was to resurface the ice at the end of the day.
Because,
you know,
fun.
Once everybody's skating on it.
Yeah, it has divots and stuff.
Yeah.
Not divots, but...
Yeah, but it's got the little places where the, you know, the ice skates have made a ring and ruts and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
So he would actually go by with the Zamboni machine. That's what I've always called it, but the technical name, I think, is an ice surfacer.
Oh.
I think Zamboni makes them, and that's why everybody calls them Zambonis.
Oh, I didn't know that was the way that was.
Oh, yeah. So he would go over at the end of the day. It would basically kind of, I guess, shave off a layer of ice, and then they put down a layer of water. And then when it freezes, it's all straight.
Oh,
pretty interesting,
that's
really.
Pretty cool. Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
So he's actually driving this ice surfacing machine. He's almost done for the night. And then Kevin was really focused on the task at hand. I mean, he just wants to make sure it's done completely properly. But he suddenly gets a strange cold chill shoot down his back. And you're thinking, it's probably not that strange for working at a hockey rink.
Sure.
Where it's cold all the time. So, but for him... He was used to the code, and it just wouldn't have been something that normally would have happened. So when this happened, he knew it was completely different than just a regular code chill. Well, he had the strange feeling that he was being watched. And you know that feeling. That's quite an unusual feeling. He starts looking around. He stops the machine. And he's just staring, right? He didn't see anybody. So he looks over at the player's bench area. Nobody. He looks at the penalty box area. And finally in the stands. Still nobody. At last, he looks up at the top of the arena. Up in the announcer's booth. There stood what appeared to be a little girl. Just staring back at him.
That's a weird place for a little girl to be.
It's a weird place for anybody to be because they've been closed down for a long time.
Well, that's very true.
At least he felt like it was a little girl. He said the person was shorter in stature and she had very long hair. Now, Kevin felt so scared that he began to cry uncontrollably.
No way.
Then the girl just disappeared. But this would not be the last time that Kevin would see the ghost girl. But it did take 2 years later.
No way. Didn't see anything for 2 years.
Nothing. 2 years later, though, he's working alone in the arena's ice plant. It was completely silent when he hears footsteps in the hallway. He stopped working and slowly made his way to the door. He'd seen this movie before. He knows what happens.
Mm-hmm.
He nervously opens the door. There was no one there. But he could still hear the footsteps, even though he couldn't see anybody. He was determined to find out the cause of these footsteps, if nothing else, just to prove that he was a rational human being and this had a completely understandable explanation. He's looking all through the arena, the locker rooms, every place. He then checked the offices and the maintenance area. Still nobody there. He even checked out the dance hall. Now, there was no one in a dance hall, but still, the footsteps were continuing. Kevin wanted to tell co-workers about this, but he knew he would just be ridiculed. Mm, so
I understand that.
He didn't say anything about it. So you can imagine how relieved he was when one day a co-worker randomly just says, "Hey, you know what? I had this very unnerving experience." And it turned out to be very similar to the one that Kevin had had. Kevin's co-worker, a gentleman by the name of Tom Besson, he'd been working late one night. He felt someone staring at him. He was working the ice, and at this time, he looked up only to see a little girl staring at him from guess where?
Yeah.
The announcer booth.
Oh my gosh, I bet Kevin felt somewhat relieved.
Yeah, this was the exact same place that Kevin had first seen the young girl. He said that she was wispy and transparent, so okay. She wasn't completely solid. He did mention that it was a little girl and she had long hair. He said it gave Tom a terrible feeling. The two men had actually witnessed almost the exact same thing, but even better, they were about to share a new sighting together.
Oh, so Kevin told him that he had seen the same thing?
Yes. Now, one night, the men are the only two in the building. They both hear the young girl call out for her mother. Twice, she called out, "Mommy, Mommy." But guess what? Kevin and Tom were not the only ones to experience the ghost. It turns out that a construction crew who had been hired to do some work there after hours reported hearing the little girl. Also, the girlfriend of a maintenance staff supervisor said that she saw the little girl once as well.
Oh my goodness.
So now you've got four people that have heard and seen
the
young lady. As more and more people opened up about seeing the little girl, more and more began to speculate just who this little girl might be. Someone had actually heard about a young girl drowning in the swamp that used to be where the recreation center is now. So apparently that was all swampland at one point. And a little girl had died there, and her remains were never found.
Aww.
So it seems to be the most logical explanation for the haunting. That
poor
this little girl
thing
might be still hanging around
there.
Yeah,
I can understand that.
Maybe why she's calling out for her mother.
Yeah. Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's do another one. For this one, we're going to go to 1965, and we're going to stay in Canada. Barbara Robertson and her family move into this house in the Yukon. Barbara started noticing some pretty strange things happening in the baby's nursery. Now, this started almost immediately. On one specific occasion, Barbara was changing her baby's diaper. As she's changing this baby's diaper, the baby's attention seems to be focused on something behind Barbara.
Oh, man.
Barbara said it seemed like the baby was looking at someone who had entered the room. Now, of course, Barbara spins around only to find that the room is completely empty. This becomes a recurring event. It happens several nights in a row. The baby would always see something because her eyes would get really wide. So now we're going to fast forward just a little bit. The baby's starting to get a little bit older. She increasingly dislikes being in that room.
The baby?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because she's getting a little bit older now, so she's not completely a baby. Playing there gave her a bad feeling, so she didn't even want to be in the room. She would tell Barbara, as she gets old enough to realize such things, that she felt like she was being watched by someone.
Dang on, man.
Now, a few years later, Barbara has another baby, Douglas. She decides to move him into the nursery, and she moved her daughter into a bigger room.
Well, does she not believe what the daughter was seeing, or?
Well, I don't know that she.
Or did she not think that cared. Something was really weird, or?
I mean, I'm sure she thought something was weird because she knew something was up. But what are you going to do? You probably only got so many rooms in a house.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So she moves Douglas into the room as a newborn. When Douglas was about 10 months old, Barbara said, one night she, this was very odd, one night she suddenly awoke from a deep sleep, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't exactly sure what had awoken her, but she knew that she was surrounded by a real and oppressive sense of horror.
That doesn't something sound fun.
Was terribly wrong.
Oh my gosh.
She then heard the sound of a young child laughing hysterically. Then it just abruptly stopped. So Barbara goes into Douglas's room. And he was laughing. And then he would stop. And then he would laugh again. It was as if someone was in the room with him playing games and making him giggle.
Well, at least he wasn't scared of it.
Right. Then suddenly, Barbara remembers her daughter saying all these things about that room, and so it's all coming back to her. Barbara runs to the dark house to ensure that there's actually no one in the house that could be, you know, doing the baby or herself or her daughter harm. She even stomped her bare feet up on the wooden floor as hard as she could so it might scare somebody. She goes back to Douglas's room, and he's standing up in the crib, and he starts pointing to a closet across the room where the closet door was now open.
No.
It was not open the first time that she was in the room. There was no one inside of it. She took a look. In the past, Barbara had actually hidden in that closet and would pop out for a game of peekaboo. Douglas would laugh just like he was doing right now. But Barbara knew that there was no one in the closet, at least no one that she could see. But Douglas was seeing something. Now, I was thinking right there at that point that maybe he was laughing just on memory.
Oh, he could have been.
You know, like, hey, I remember that time. And, you know, because sometimes we'll think about something and just start laughing. But
we do that all the time.
She said the door was open where it wouldn't open before.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that clicks.
I wonder if she's thinking in the back of her mind, like, oh, Lord, I've hidden that stupid closet. There was probably something in here with me.
So when the Robertsons actually bought this house, it was fully furnished. The family tried to find out some history of the place to see, you know, what the hell's going on here. Now, originally the house was a log cabin, and the first occupants there were in 1906. That person was the postmaster, Dr. Frederick Warren Kane. Then in the 1920s, two riverboat captains owned it, Captain Campbell and Captain McKay.
Okay.
The house became known as the Captain Campbell House. And then later, a butcher by the name of Gordon Armstrong moved in. Now, he would later be elected as the first mayor of White House, which is where the house is actually located. That's the section's located. That was 1950. Funny things happened when he lived in the house. He used one of the bedrooms as his office, but he said that he never really felt alone in that room. In fact, he often looked up from his work to see a small boy watching him or run through the walls.
Dude.
This was the exact same room where Barbara's children had stayed. Freaky?
That is very freaky. It didn't seem like, though, this thing was was mean or anything at all.
Armstrong's story, back when he started talking about it in the 50s, spread all through the neighborhood. And locals came to believe that the house was obviously haunted by a young boy who was 7 or 8 years old who had drowned near that house in the at the previous decade. Barbara and her family moved out in 1977 after 12 years of creepy experiences. But that's not the end of the story.
Oh, I was going to say, they stuck it out there pretty long.
The next owner, a gentleman by the name of Harold Ryder, told the Yukon Historical and Museum Association that a tourist once rented the property for a few days. The tourist hadn't heard any of the ghostly tales of the house, so this was a complete surprise. But he not only saw the spirit, but he felt the ghost of the child. It was at the end of the day. He was tired. He was about to fall asleep. So, you know, most people, they're going to go to the room, call it a night, which is what he tried to do. But before he could fall asleep, he felt somebody tap him on the shoulder. The man rolled over, and he saw the young boy run out of the room.
Aww.
So, he got so scared that he gathered up some bedding and he went outside where he slept on the front lawn. He wouldn't even stay in the house.
My goodness.
After this instance, the house remained empty and was unused except for storage.
Aww.
In 2021, the house was actually demolished.
No way. Yeah. Why though? Was it just bad shape?
Probably.
Aww.
Or they needed land for something else.
I wonder what happened to that little boy. What happened to his spirit?
I don't know, but I mean, he could still be, if they build another property there, like a warehouse or something, he could still be there.
Yeah. I wonder what he wants. I mean, maybe just needed a friend.
Who knows?
No.
Maybe like other people, if he drowned, maybe he doesn't even realize he's dead and he's just lingering.
Aww.
All right, last one. This one's a pretty short story, and it's more of a premonition story than a ghost story, but I thought it was fascinating. When Frances Carriage was 6 years old, she and her mother were visiting a cave on a beach in Devon, England. Suddenly, Frances just had to get out of the cave. She screamed, "Get out quick!" She grabbed her mom's hand and rushed out of the cave. Well, beachgoers outside the cave laughed at him. The mother was embarrassed, to say the least, and she scolded her daughter for overreacting. But nevertheless, she allowed her daughter to keep pulling her along by the hand. And when they were a safe distance away from the cave, Frances began to relax a little bit. Suddenly, there was a noise that sounded like rolling thunder. The mother quickly grabbed Frances and started running. She turns and saw a stream of large boulders were now covering
the opening,
the cave area where they were. And the family that laughed at them were now dead. They were caught beneath all of this.
Oh my gosh.
The barrage of rocks also buried others that were close by. But how did Frances know that this was about to happen?
I don't know how she would know that. But, I mean, it's really sad for the other families that, you know, totally laughed. But at least she saved her and her mother's life. Yeah, and I hope the mother looked at her like, oh my gosh, I'm going to believe what you tell me the next time.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation.
Yeah. I don't like those endings.
Yeah, me either. But that's what we got. So,
well,
here's what it is.
These were very good stories.
So, all right. So, here what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be back with some housekeeping, and then we'll be back with our interview. And you're going to get to hear some really cool aspects of obviously what happened to Todd Bates.
Okay. Can't wait.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
All right, Tracy, so here's what we got. Obviously, this is the last week to buy tickets for Buffalo.
Yeah, you guys, buy some tickets. We can't wait to meet you all.
Yeah, I would like to see as close to a full house as we possibly can up there. We've not been to that area to do a show, and I can honestly say we're not going back. So nothing to do with Buffalo. It's just we're kind of, like I said, putting an end to most of these live shows except for close. I'm not saying it won't ever happen, but it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, or it'll be a while.
Yeah. All right. With that being said, there are tickets there. Someone says Ticketmaster. No. But at hillbillyhorrorstories.com, you can get your tickets there. Detroit, August 20th. That show has been selling like hotcakes in the past 2 weeks.
Good. Perfect.
Obviously, Brohio and Justin Rim were at both of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
Then, September 30th, there are only 18 tickets left for us and the Confessionals in Gatlinburg.
No way.
And there are only like 25 tickets left for us and Mysterious Circumstances at the Bell Mansion.
Oh my gosh, those are going really great.
Yes, and remember, there's only 50 tickets available, and that includes an investigation from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., a tour, and the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you get a lot for the money there. More bang for your buck.
Yeah, good. I can't wait for that show either.
Don't forget about the cruise.
Oh, yeah.
All the information for the cruise is available at hillbillyhorrorstories.com.
Yeah, we're really excited for that. I can't get here quick enough, I don't think.
Yeah, that's next September, so a little over a year away. So you got plenty of time to make payments on it.
Yeah, definitely.
Plenty of time.
The more the merrier, guys.
All right, Tracy, what do you got going on over there?
Okay, for our reviews, we have Duck Boy, Mojo Lobster, Texas Wargamer, STID 24, and Denisern. Thank you guys so much for your reviews. It means a lot to us. We appreciate y'all so much. Our Patreons this week, we have Mark, David Bentley, and Sarah Mitchell. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate your patronage. And, you know, it gives us a chance to keep these shows going, and we just can't thank you guys enough.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. And Lily appreciates it. All right, Tracy, let's take a listen to Todd Bates.
All right.
Hey, guys, I have a special guest with me tonight. I've got author and podcaster Todd Bates. Todd, I'm glad to have you on, first of all.
Oh, it's great to be here, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
I was telling you back when we set this thing up initially that I ran across you on another podcast. And I thought, well, this looks pretty good. So I reached out to you, and then I ended up having the podcaster on as well. So it's one of those things that's just that work out for the best.
Happenstance. I love happenstance. Everything happens for a reason, I think.
So tell me a little bit about your book, The Haunted Voice. I've got a copy of it here at the house. It's a good read. It's an easy read. That's kind of books that I like because I'm not much of a reader. I read out of necessity, not out of fun. So if I actually start and finish a book, there's actually, you know, says something about
that
it.
Sums up if that happens. Oh man, I'm telling you that book is it's more of a release than anything. I wrote that silently. No one knew that I was writing a book or I'm no writer. It was all of my innermost, deepest feelings and things that have happened in my past. It's a mini autobiography about myself. And I was told years ago by a therapist that I should write a book and release this, make it real to not only myself, but to anybody that reads it, get it off my chest, so to speak, in a professional way. It's kind of what it is. And it was such a bear to get through because it's very emotional. There's, you know, I mean, I went to prison. There's, I work corrections, then was on the other side of the bars. And then, you know, how I get in there, it was just craziness. And I had to dig deep back in my memory that I tried to recess to get this out. So there, yeah, it was emotional. There's a lot of tears and things flowing, but so did the words. They just kind of, they just flow. And it hit me that not only was this book, did I write this to help other people that are bipolar, maybe suffer from alcoholism like I do, or, you know, it's touched a lot of people and they've connected with it. I wrote it to make amends. I wrote it for so many different reasons, different amends, mainly with myself, closure. And also wanted to put in there how, you know, skepticism goes a long way. And, you know, I'm still skeptical about a few things, of course. I mean, we all have caution in the back of our mind, but, you know, I write about the skepticism in there and how I was raised Catholic and now I'm a recovering Catholic, I like to say.
That's a good way to put it.
I tell you, Jerry, growing up in that, it shut me down as I'd heard about ghosts and aliens and things, of course, but to talk about this with your parents or anything at that age, it was unheard of. My God, they'd have me exercised, you know. So getting into the book and everything and what's behind it, because I'm not the kind of person that's going to sit here and tell you, oh, I'm not going to say anything, go buy the book. No, I'll just tell you, because the book is cheap. It's very cheap. It's a hardback's $15.
You know, let me stop you there, because I want to say something. You and I see a lot of you in myself. You know, I could literally have just done, I've done this same interview, I don't know how many times, when somebody asked me about my book, because it's literally the same thing. There's a lot of autobiographical stuff in there. I talk about all of my shortcomings in life, all the things that I regret. You know, I don't consider myself an author. The words just flowed when I wrote, because I was just telling my story, you know, and there's still paranormal in there. There's still, but I mean, literally everything that you've said up to this point is exactly the same things that I've said in interviews about my book. Oh. And I put it out to help other people.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing, is I thought maybe it would help people, you know, and when you just made the comment about, you know, hey, I'll say whatever, I read my whole book. I did the entire audio book and put it out on the feed for free for people who couldn't afford the book. So, so yeah, I mean, you, like I said, we're mirror images of each other when it comes to talking about why we wrote our books and how we feel about the books.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I'm glad that we have that connection, because you get it. And finally, somebody gets me. It's nice to have that in life.
I mean, people, you know, tell me, people, and I don't know if you're the exact same way, but people tell me all the time, they're like, how many books have you sold? I don't have a clue. I don't even, because I mean, I order some, I just got a new shipment in, because when we do live events, I'll sell them at live events. But like, to go to Amazon and see how many I've sold, I haven't done that since the first probably 3-4 months that it was out. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't even tell, because the royalty checks, you know, they're not much, obviously,
right,
but they just get deposited every month. They send it to the bank account. I don't look at my bank account. Tracy, you know, Tracy, I got her to look at it every 10 minutes and tell me every time I've used a card. Did you just buy? Yes, I just bought. You know, she'll, I could take money out and she'll know. She knows within like 5 minutes, and I know she don't have notifications set up, but she checks the account that much to where she knows. But I can't even tell you how many books I've sold. I can't tell you what gets deposited in the account. Like I said, I know it's not much, you know, maybe 20, 30 bucks or something like that. But I couldn't tell you because I don't check it. That wasn't the important part to me.
It wasn't written for money. It wasn't written to be like a bestseller. It wasn't written to be some huge novel. This was just like you said, my story. our story is just our story. And if people want to read about it, absolutely buy it. If you can't afford it, I always give away free copies to those that can't afford it. I love giving away copies online too, free signed copies and things. It's to help people. You know, it's the book. I mean, I'm bipolar as hell, Jerry. And writing that helped unwind a lot of those things. And maybe someone else that suffers from that, because a lot of people don't openly talk about it. I just learned not to care anymore. it was easier that way.
And that's the key. And like, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm bipolar, but I do, you know, have suffered from depression for years. Mm-hmm. I had a failed suicide attempt. And, you know, I wanted people to know that there is a, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel if you choose to see it.
Absolutely. You just have to keep kicking. You just have to keep fighting. And that light's there. It may seem dim, but it does. It gets brighter. And, you know, going through that, what I did, for example, the turning point was working corrections for all those years and then being behind bars. And I think that's where, back in the day, Jerry, you probably wouldn't give me the time of day. I was the biggest prick known to man. I was just straight and narrow, eyes always forward. And, you know, that's it. And then all of this happened when, you know, while working corrections, I'm in there and the most distinct sound, I'll never forget it, is when that door shut. You know, you're done. You are done. Your freedoms are gone. Your rights are gone. You are done.
And that's a sound you had heard hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. But it's from a different perspective.
Absolutely. Totally different perspective. And it's one where once you hear it, you really don't forget it. Sure, some sound different and so forth, but they still give you that same anxiety, that same angst, that same anguish. It's insane when that thing locks and you can't get out. You're stuck. You're done. You think you're helpless. There's nothing you can do. But there is. You know, I think that was spirit's way, someone's way, something divine shutting me down so I could reboot. I am and always will be a workaholic. It's pretty bad. You too, I take it. It's pretty bad. And you know, with having that and being confined, you have nothing to do but think. And since I was trained to do certain things in corrections, one of them was to get out of electronic cells. They had to put me under what's called the Folger's Adams key, which is a huge, massive key, and it's a lock, and it's on the solitary side, and it was terrible. I was in there 23 hours a day under camera. They could see my every move. They would let me out for 30 minutes to get a shower. And then I had 30 minutes to sit and read. And all they had were medical books. So I know a lot about prescriptions and things. I mean, that was the turning point of the whole thing. Is I had found myself. I went to the lowest of lows, Jerry, at that point.
Would you like to share with the people how you ended up in there?
Sure. Absolutely. I was a corrections officer. I worked in a super maximum security prison, and I was in charge of a maximum security cell house. It was filled with different types of gang affiliations and so forth in there. And one day we had a random shakedown where we go in and search their cells for contraband and so forth. So we went in there and we found some contraband. Normally, you know, in the past tobacco, I was like, look, just don't make it obvious. You know, I wasn't that bad, but this guy had some serious contraband, pills and other hard illicit drugs, you know? So those were confiscated. Now, when I walked out of that cell, And he was cuffed right there by the balcony. He said, "That's okay, Bates. One of these days you'll see what it's like behind bars." Threats. You hear him every day. You just blow it off and walk on. He made good on it. What had happened? He had paid, come to find out, he had paid another officer to get my information. And they were driving by the house. It was horrifying. I was sitting in my recliner with a shotgun on my lap, for crying out loud, just waiting. And then his little cronies came down and started, that they asked one day how my daughter was doing, or how my wife was doing. And then the second time he came down, he asked, "So how's your daughter, Casey?" And that was it. When I heard that, it was like every ounce of life was sucked out of me at that very moment. And I caved. I said, What do you want? Because what am I going to do? Notify internal affairs? Who's as crooked as can be?
Right.
This was a moment where I was trapped and there was no way out. There was no way out because they knew where I lived. And these people were hardcore. These weren't like somebody you just pissed off. These people were hardcore serious. And if I didn't do what I did, they would have driven by my house and they call it blackballing in there, but they would have shot it up with myself and family inside. No questions asked, no nothing, no remorse, and drove on. So to make a long story short, they said I had to bring in a package. I'm thinking tobacco, because tobacco's gold in this place, you know. No. Here I am, I'm in full uniform, and I'm told to bring in this package, full uniform, drive up to this pickup point, so to speak. And this woman opens up my passenger door, sits down, hands me a paper bag. I didn't look in the bag. I just took the bag, possession, and put it underneath my seat. The person got out, I put that car in reverse, and I have every angle. There are police cars, just flying in from every single angle.
Complete setup.
Oh, yeah. And they rip open my door, pull me, yank me out, throw me on the hood, guns to my head, and come to find out what was in that bag was 2 3-quarter ounces of cocaine. That's a lot. That was looking at 57 years. And since I had a clean record, they dropped it to the lowest felony possible to where I could never work law enforcement again, which was dream number one. And they made good on that. But that is how... I'm trying to think of how to say this, but I wouldn't change a thing. I would have done it all over again, just the same. I really would have, because at the moment, that was my only choice. And I was really put in a hard place and had to make that choice. And it was, you know, part of me says, you know, Todd, would you have really gone through with it and brought that into a controlled environment like that? In the end, I don't know. I don't know if I could have went that far. I know I went far enough. But it was a nightmare, Jerry. It was a nightmare. And it's tough to recover from something like that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure.
It's a blow to the head. It's a blow to the head. And that's where, you know, I in prison like that, learned a lot of different things, a lot of different skills I didn't know. I mean, I feel I was corrected in there in a system that I didn't believe in. I felt that I was rehabilitated in there, taught a lesson, because what I did was stupid, but what I did, I didn't have a choice. So sometimes you just do things in the heat of the moment and just do them. And that makes everything all better right there. Oh, adorable.
Yeah, she won't quit chewing on cords. And it's going to end up being a quick end to the interview in unlikely circumstances if she doesn't.
Cute little thing. Oh.
So you, how long did you end up spending in prison altogether?
18 months.
18 months.
18 months. I was sentenced to 3 years.
Assuming out on good behavior.
Mm-hmm. I was actually released early at 11 months, but I was sentenced for 18 months and released early for good behavior.
And where did life take you after you got out? Because obviously you can't go back into law enforcement. So where do you go?
Well, this is what happened. I get back out into the world, society. I can't deal with it. After 11 months of being in there, I didn't feel safe in the world. Just 11 months. I was that used to it. And I remember everything hitting me at once. Because with me, like grieving and so forth, I do it in stages like a lot of people do. But this hit me in stages. And when I got home, I snapped. I mean, there's no other way to put it, is I snapped. And I was found rocking back and forth in a corner. I was institutionalized for 2.5 months. And of course, they throw in PTSD and all this. And those are all labels to me. You know, they're all labels to me. And it is a feeling that, you know, a battle that we have to deal with ourselves. These are our demons. And I talk to therapists. I talk to psychiatrists constantly, weekly. It's one of those things. But where I went after is I snapped, lost my mind for a little while, Jerry, and had to get a grip on society. And once I did is when I found the paranormal community. No one else would accept me for what I was. Everyone talked down bad, of course, about me. The paranormal community accepted me for who I was. I met a man named Jason Snyder. He took me on a tour to try this out because it was something that I was skeptical about. And he says, come on, it'll be fun. You know, we may even get something. I'm like, okay, let's do this. So, he tells me to bring a recorder. I bring a recorder along, an old cassette recorder. And that's when my first EVP was captured, was on that tour. He taught me a few things. Take it home, process it. It's a horse of all things. And that's where the spark and the obsession came for communication. I'm like, okay, how in the hell did that thing get on my recorder, but I didn't hear it? And being the skeptic, it's how in the hell is that a horse when when I'm in a, you know, there's no horses. So, I mean, I can't see any horses. But it's an old barn that I was in and captured that. So that's where the obsession just rolled and rolled and rolled. And I couldn't get in touch with anybody. Like today, you could just fire up Instant Messenger. And, you know, back then this was early 2002. And I had no clue. So I'm emailing and dialing, you know, we had dial up and all that fun stuff. Fire up the Netscape Navigator. And I'm looking for EVP information. That's what Jason told me it was, electronic voice phenomenon. All right. So I'm going to do some digging on that. I found a woman named Sarah Estep from the American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena, which I don't think is no longer around anymore. But she is who brought the EVP concept here to the States. and developed the ABC classification system as well. And she took me under her wing, and I had all these questions, and she had some answers, but again, she had questions firing back at me because no one knows. No one really knows. But she, I remember her, you know, talking to them every morning, and she would do a recording on a reel to reel. And so consistency, she's okay, consistent, got to be consistent with these. That's what led me to the entire community itself, was I learned so much about electronic voice phenomenon that I wanted to help other people and teach them ways too, so they can go out and do this, so we can get more, you know, data and evidence. And that's where Haunted Voices was born. Hauntedvoices.com, which still exists. It just leads to the station now, but that was originally built. That website was built with a chat room, because that's all we had back then, was a chat room to talk EVP. And that's what we did. We talked ghost voices. We talked disembodied. We talked about solar flares, you know, EMF detections, all kinds of different things in there. Then we started having guests come in to the chat. We had guests on the chat, so we would talk back and forth with them and have them share their information. And at the same time, I was teaching EVP lessons on the site for free, and people would, you know, come through. We didn't have like Zoom or anything back then, but we could all connect through an audio server. And that's where the show was born. We just started talking like we are now about EVP. And that's how I rolled into the paranormal community. And I can't thank them enough. Still to this day, they literally saved my life, because I was in a bad place at that time, and I was welcomed by them.
I mean, but you were getting into the community about the time that the boom was starting to happen with, you know, the television shows and, you know, so you got in right about the right time when everything exploded and for the paranormal.
I remember when Ghost Hunters first aired, and it you know, it was something. I'm like, you're kidding me. They're putting this stuff on television now. It was crazy. Now, there's thousands and thousands
everywhere.
But I look at them in two ways. These shows is, number one, they're entertainment. You have to think of them that way. Don't sit there with a notepad, folks. My opinion. I mean, I've watched some of them, and people just have to remember that stuff's produced. It's compressed. It's not what investigating really is. You know, they don't show you the hours that they have to sit there for nothing, which is good, because you have that time to tune your senses, to kind of listen, to become one with the environment, to kind of just ground yourself there. The silent time is good as well, because you could be anywhere else, but there you are at that haunted location, and hopefully they can connect with you through just other different ways. Cause I think there's many different ways. I used the gadgets in the past. I do a lot more gut feelings now and things. I follow that more than what I used to. I don't get out in the field as much. I retired from it. I don't do all these really wicked locations anymore. I do there's a nice place right down the street here that my Sherry and I go to. And that's all I need. It gives me all the fix, so to speak, the questions, the answers that just aren't there, damn it. I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to find them. I don't know if we're supposed to. I just know they're not there yet. I don't know. I want to see more breakthroughs coming. I haven't seen anything massive lately.
Well, the problem is, even if there is a breakthrough with AI and everything going on, people are going to assume that it's just something that's been created.
Yep.
And it's, you know, so you, I don't know that we'll ever have the proof, because even if the proof's there, we're not going to believe it's the proof.
No, I mean, it's with Photoshop and, you know, back in the day you had people trying to fake them with Photoshop and you could still kind of tell it was a fake, but these days with that AI, that artificial stuff, it's almost spotless.
I saw something the other day. It was, and it wasn't perfect by any means, but it literally was a live stream of Donald Trump versus Joe Biden in like a fake debate, and they were cursing at each other and stuff. But I'm telling you, there was a couple of glitches when one would stop and the other one would start in the video, but this was video and audio. And you literally, if you didn't know that this was satire and fake, the voices were spot on. They were saying stuff that neither one of them would, I'm not going to say neither one would actually say, because they probably would in private, but nothing they would say, you know, like publicly. On television publicly. But I mean, I was amazed. I was like, I'm watching their lips and everything they're saying is like, it's spot on. And then the voices are exactly there. And then I hear a couple of days ago that, you know, they're taking John Lennon's voice from an old recording, a demo, and the Beatles are going to put out another Beatles recording.
No.
With John Lennon's voice from an old demo where they've taken part of it and used AI to sharpen it up. And, and they're going to put this song on. So that's forthcoming. And I mean, it's just amazing now that they can take anybody's voice and have them sing a song or whatever the case is with AI. And we're just really getting started on that. What's it going to be 10 years from now?
Yeah, exactly. And it's scary to think. It's scary to think that a team is going to go out there and capture something that is going to be just beyond profound. And no one's going to believe them.
Yeah, it's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's what's coming, I'm afraid.
And well, you already see it. I mean, like you had the whistleblower come out and start talking about, hey, wait, we've got, you know, 12 different alien crafts that are intact. And people's like, it didn't even hardly make the news.
It didn't even make some circles. That completely blew my mind. And that's when I knew something's going on, because when you have a UFO disclosure and everybody's like, are you kidding me? What happened? I mean, that's big news.
Yeah. I mean, in the last 3 or 4 years with all the stuff that's came out with the Navy saying that the film footage that Tom DeLonge had was actual, you know, video, and you see these crafts going into water. And I mean, people now are like, it's like, that's yesterday's news. We're over UFOs. They exist. Let's move on.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is a credit to, for me anyway, their existence, the films, the Hollywood, you know, one of the ones that really stands out in my mind, it's called The Fourth Kind. I don't know. Have you seen that?
Oh, that's very good. That's freaky.
That is a freaky movie. It really is. And it just comes out as it's like a true story. It's almost like it's a government test film. Like, let's see how society reacts to this. And then maybe we'll let them know about this. You know, it's just kind of funny how things like that happen, how movies like that are pushed, Close Encounters of the Third Kind and so forth, all the way up to, I mean, even E.T., all these things. I wonder how society reacts. And then
remember Alien Autopsy that Fox put out like years ago, 10, 12, 13 years ago, or whatever it was?
That was scary.
And people were like, is that real? Is it not real?
No one to believe. It was scary to watch, because you see something, you're like, oh, wow, that's crazy. This is insane. You know, this guy's cutting up on something that's not of this earth. But I think to this day, people don't know if those are real or fake.
I think it came out that it was fake, but there's always going to be people to dispute it.
Always.
Tell me about the podcast these days. So if somebody tunes in, what are they going to get?
Well, what they're going to get, Haunted Voices every Thursday night at 8 Central. We've went from audio to video recently, and it's been a nice change. What they're going to get, We talk with different guests all the way from ghosts and spirits all the way down to, we talk about the fae, elementals, you name it, authors. They can take away quite a bit from it, a lot of education from it. It's a show similar to this, Jerry. Just we sit down, we talk, try to answer a few questions. If we don't, well, we'll try again some other time.
How do they tune in?
They can go to WLTKDB.com. That's WLTKDB.com or hauntedvoices.com. Either one of those will get you to the station Thursday nights live. They can tune in through YouTube, Facebook. We put it out through all the social media outlets and everything. And then it's flipped into a podcast after the live show. And then that's put up on Podbean. You can search Haunted Voices Radio and it'll come up on all the podcast platforms for you.
Awesome. Todd, where can I get the book if they want to check out the book?
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks. If you want to get a signed copy, you can go to my website, toddmichaelbates.com. Todd Bates was taken by a football player. toddmichaelbates.com. You can get the book there, or you can find it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Apple Books, places like that.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure having you on. I'm glad we finally got to work this out.
It's been awesome, Jerry. I can't thank you enough. I've had a great time.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Todd, and we will talk to you in the near future.
You bet. Take care.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us this week, and hopefully we'll be seeing a bunch of you in Buffalo next week.
Can't wait, guys. We hope you have a blessed week.
Hey, guys. Have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.